So this is actually an update of a talk that I gave when I came here 2 years ago. Various things have happened since then. So let me just give you the overview first. So this is pretty much the same introduction that I gave 2 years ago. So if you can remember back to then I wouldn't need to do it, but maybe I'll quickly go through it. And then I'll turn attention particularly to looking at this process, the motivation to look at this particular observable is the die-jet cross-section, and the idea is to veto on a third jet in between the die-jets. So it's not really a gap, it's not really an empty region of activity, but it's a region of diminished hadronic activity. So that's what I mean by gap. And of course that's important at the LHC, the idea that we need to understand how the jet vetoes work at the LHC is important, not least for Higgs plus two jet production, where one typically, in order to enhance the weak boson fusion cross-section, cuts on two jets at high variant mass and high rapidity separation, and then insists that there shouldn't be a third jet in between those jets. And I'll finish off by presenting the superleading logarithms that I talked about 2 years ago. There's still a question mark after them, but it's kind of fading away, I think. I'll present a new way. We've recalculated them in a way which doesn't specifically fix a colour basis, so they become a little bit more, their origin is more transparent now. And that's why we think that they're probably really there. So the kind of motivation generally for focusing attention on soft gluons rather than any other type of particle is that what we're trying to do is, so here's some short distance process with some hard partons coming out. The hard partons are these solid lines, and the idea is that we want to understand how such a short distance interaction radiates additional radiation, and clearly something that we need to understand. And of course, a priori, it might not be that we could really get a grip of that, because the hadronization process could completely wreck any correlations between the underlying partons, which we could, in principle, try to calculate in QCD and the final state that's measured in a detector. But we now know that that's not the case. So we can hope that we can make a lot of progress in these calculations using QCD perturbation theory. And when we do come to turn our attention to dressing some particular hard scatter with radiation, then there are two types of emission that we need to focus our attention on. There's the emission of soft gluons, which are emitted generally at wide angles. So soft gluons mean that they've got small energy, and or collinear emissions. So if two particles, their angle of emission, the angle between them is going to zero. They're the important guys, because in this case we have essentially a logarithm of the angle that makes its appearance, and in this case we have a logarithm of the gluon energy. So that becomes very large, compensates for the smallness of the strong coupling constant, which isn't that small, and necessitates that we have to include these effects to all orders in perturbation theory. Okay, so not too much detail on this. So here I'm calculating, just showing how the formula goes for the cross-section for n plus 1 particles, and how it's related, how it factorises from the cross-section for n particles. So the plus 1 here referring to this, to one soft gluon is added to an n parton matrix, an n parton cross section. And if this is a soft gluon, then the cross section is actually factorizes in this nice way. This factor here is the distinctive factor associated with soft gluon emission. So we've got this numerator is coming from these two, pi dot pj, because the vertex for emission of a soft gluon is very simple. It's just proportional to the four momentum of the fast particle. And then these two factors here, these two propagator factors. This would be just fine, right? If it were this if it weren't for this, right? This factor here, it makes this factorization limited in its usefulness, right? Because after we've emitted several gluons, the colour structure for a subsequent emission becomes, you know, we're moving into higher and higher representations of SU3, and so this colour factor just very quickly becomes incalculable. And in all cases that anybody has performed that's not true. In all cases in the Monte Carlos that have been written, so the simulations of these, this thing's always been calculated in a large NC approximation. So and the virtual corrections, there's a completely analogous formula for the virtual corrections, and we'll see that shortly, because I'm going to spend a little bit more time on the soft gluons. So the key point from this slide is, well, there's this lovely factorization, but there's this problem with the colour factor. I won't say much at all about collinear gluons. They're next. Look at collinear emissions. So these are generic partons, quarks or gluons. And in the case that this angle becomes small, we again get a factorization. And this is generic. I mean, we sum over all diagrams. So the two partons that are collinear needn't have come from the same primary parton. You know, so the quantum mechanics has been taken into account. We're summing over the whole set of relevant diagrams. So for any two particles when they become collinear, the nice thing is that the collinear branching is essentially classical, in that after we've summed over all diagrams, we end up with a colour factor which is just the colour factor of the sum of the collinear partons. So it's as if the collinear partons were emitted off a single colour, a single parton, even though we've summed over a whole pile of diagrams. So that means that we can factorise the cross section again, but this time the colour structure is always diagonal. So this is like a splitting function for this guy to radiate off this guy. Sorry, this guy to radiate off. I'll split into these two. So the way in which both these types of radiation are included in the Monte Carlo, so Herwig and Pythia in particular being and others now, but I know Herwig particularly well, and so this is done precisely, and the soft gluon emission is included in a classical branching cascade as well. So, it's only possible to do that, as we'll see in a second, in the large NC approximation. So the collinear branchings are treated exactly, and the soft emissions, the wide-angle soft emissions, only in the leading NC approximation. Okay, so of course, not all observables are going to be sensitive to these collinear or soft emissions, because we've got the possibility that that's something which is expected intuitively, of course. That, for example, the plus or minus dual cross section is the classic example of an observable which, or any total cross section which doesn't depend upon these effects. And the way that works for the soft gluons is I spent a minute or two on this because it's going to be relevant later. So this is the matrix element and the complex conjugate of the matrix element. So these are the kind of diagrams that I draw. So and these are the same diagram essentially, just cut in different ways. So you see that. So the result is that when this is a soft gluon, the sum over cuts vanishes. And that goes by the name of the Bloch-Notz theorem, and that's why it is that an inclusive observable is not going to be sensitive to soft gluon emission because of this.
Sorry, why can't they radiate?
Because they can do whatever they want after they've been produced. So it's a causality statement, essentially.
But isn't that cross-sections defined for what you observe an infinite distance away, so doesn't it make it very difficult to make arguments about causality?
Well, whatever the final state is, it has to be produced. Has to be produced with 100% of the time by the, well, the if it's a three-photon exchange, for example, photon goes to QQ bar or E plus E minus R, right? So the hadronic total cross section always goes through QQ. E plus E minus goes to QQ bar. Always. Now what happens after that, right? It doesn't matter. With some totally inclusively over, it can emit 100 million soft gluons or none at all, right? So, but it always goes through the QQ bar process, right? So it's that's the statement. So and here, so what it means is that if we calculate, so we want to calculate the one soft gluon correction to the E plus E minus total cross section. So if we did it, then we would we'd have to take this diagram into account, this real emission, we'd take into account this virtual correction, and we'd sum over the whole phase space of this guy. And in doing that, what we end up getting is that the real emissions cancel the real part of the virtual corrections. Point by point, you can rewrite the loop integral here so that it looks like a phase space integral. And point by point, this cancels this, right? And the imaginary parts of these guys cancel trivially because this guy's on the left of the cut and this guy's on the right. So there are two mechanisms at work which make this right hand side equal zero. So that, and in that way, you can see. So the cross section isn't affected by this effect. But all of the observables that I'm going to be interested in particular, gaps between jets. So let's look at gaps between jets. So let's suppose these are the two primary jets, right? And I'm going to make some statement that there shouldn't be a third jet in between the primary jets. So this guy's not allowed in some region of phase space. Now, the virtual corrections still are integrated over that region of phase space. So I get a miscancellation between the real and virtual corrections. And the net contribution to the cross-section is the contribution from the virtual correction integrated over the region of phase space, of which the real emission is forbidden. So if we're talking about gaps between jets, kind of jumping ahead a little bit, but we may as well do it while we're talking about it. Then, these guys are the two jets, and then I've got the gap, there's some region in between. And so I'll talk about integrating the virtual corrections over the in-gap region. That's the language, the kind of language I use, right? And later on, we'll talk about emissions in the out-of-gap region, which it turns out. So in the out-of-gap region, you might naively think you never have to worry about emissions in the out-of-gap region in jet-gap-jet. Because you always sum inclusively over that region. If you always sum inclusively over that region, you might think this always works, right, for emissions in that region. And that's not going to hold. That's not going to be true. Okay. So slide. So that is a particular way of phrasing the statement of coherence, and. It's the main reason that I want to introduce it is that it's kind of left field, this slide, but it provides a bit of an insight into the effects that we're going to be talking about later, and it also explains why it is that wide angle soft gluons can be included in Hertwig's parton shower. So where there are all kinds of interference effects which might spoil the ability to put it into a parton shower, classical branching, but don't. So here's a soft gluon, and here's a bunch of collinear particles, and the statement took, and here's so this is a final state particle. There can be lots of other particles coming off here, right? So this is some hard scatter with a fast particle coming off, and then a bunch of collinear particles. It's not a single diagram. This is schematic for a whole bunch of collinear particles. if we consider the emission of a soft gluon off that collinear bunch, then the statement is that it's as if the gluon, so that the matrix element for this summed over all particles, collinear particles, is proportional to the summed colour charge of all the collinear particles. So that's a very nice result. So it's as if the guy is emitted off, and because these are all collinear and this is soft, the kinematics doesn't become effective. So I can just pick this guy up and reattach it to here. Right? So these are all collinear as far as this guy's concerned. So this guy means that this guy's emitted at a large angle relative to these guys. And you can keep iterating that process. So the wide-angle soft gluons become embedded in an angular-ordered parton cascade. So and once we have that's the language of a classical branching, and that means it's easy to write a Monte Carlo to take it into account.
But the angular ordering comes from some large angle.
Yeah. I'm just thinking whether it's the. See, this guy. Yeah, this is always possible, but it doesn't mean that the colour structure is necessarily still tractable, right? Because once we've got several wide-angle gluons in the final state, the probability of emitting a subsequent wide-angle gluon, this is the sustainment about emitting soft gluons off collinear partons, isn't it? Yeah. The same is true for this guy could, in principle, this diagram's a code for both the real and virtual corrections, so there could be another particle coming up here and this guy could attach to it. Right? So this isn't only for real emissions. So for
the angle ordering comes from interference between the ideas, isn't that right?
Well, that's encoded in what this isn't some single parton branching into lots of collinear partons. What I really mean is that there is some matrix element with lots of collinear partons in it. Right, but the diagrams where you know this parton over here in the diagram could be collinear to this guy over here, and diagrammatically they may not be connected at all. Summed overall diagrams, it looks like it's impossible to include that. Lots of interference terms, it looks like it's quite impossible to include that in a classical branching cascade. But it's a result of the fact that the soft gluon is the matrix element is proportional to the sum of the colour charges of the collinear particles. It allows us to reorganise the calculation in, so it has the structure of a classical partonic cascade with angular ordering. I'm not going to be talking much about angular ordering or subsequently. What I want to draw attention to here is that so the same thing works for the initial state. So here's a bunch of particles that are collinear to the an incoming particle, and the same sort of summed over all emissions, so summed over all ways of attaching the soft gluon, and the real part of these matrix elements has the same structure. We can reattach the soft gluon and attach it close to the hard scatter. The imaginary part, so in the case that this guy is a virtual gluon, the imaginary part doesn't have this property. So in particular, so when this guy's a Coulomb gluon or a Glauber gluon, it doesn't work, this identity. And this result is essentially the reason why proving the proofs of factorization in QCD are difficult. Right? It's the role of these Glauber gluons which break this soft collinear factorization. It's explicit soft and collinear factorization. You can see, actually, forgetting about angular ordering, that what this allows you to do straight away is put all the soft emissions around the hard scatter and then have the collinear emissions So you've got like jet functions for the external legs, and then you dress the high scatter with the with soft gluons. Something like that, in fact. Okay. So, when are these soft gluon corrections important? What kind of observables? Well, they'll be important if we really restrict real emissions. So if we say that over a large part of the phase space for real emission, real emissions are not allowed. So we do some. So what kinds of observables forbid real emissions over the bulk of phase space? Right. And it's if you like the volume of phase space in which you actually allow the real emissions determines the logarithm, the size of the logarithm. So the more you squeeze the emissions, the more significant the logarithm is. So these are all examples of observables where these soft gluon emissions are going to be very important. For example, particle production near threshold, because subsequent real emissions are not allowed close to threshold by the energy momentum conservation. And the process I'm going to look at is gaps between jets, where we've got a pair of jets separated by some interval in rapidity, y. And we're going to make the statement that there should be no third jet in the event with transverse momentum greater than some scale, Q0, in that region. So Q0 is a perturbatively large scale. I'm going to show results later with the LHC where it's 20 GeV. Okay. And since the observable is restricting emissions in the gap region, I expect one logarithm for each of these soft wide-angle gluons. I don't expect double logarithms because I would only get double logarithms, two logarithms for each power of alpha s, if there would be some collinear enhancement as well. But this observable isn't sensitive to collinear emissions. If the emission's collinear to one of the outgoing particles, then it's in the jet, so it's summed inclusively. Or if it's collinear to one of the incoming particles, it's in so here and here, which is in the region where I sum inclusively. Right. So there are no collinear logarithms.
What if you have two soft guys that are
cold? Where are they going, these two soft guys?
They're going in the same direction. Two soft guys in the same direction.
Are they in the gap region you're referring to?
Pardon me?
You're referring to in the gap region?
Yeah.
So
somehow it's kept, they divide soft, can't be soft and collinear at the same time somehow.
I don't think they can calculate this in soft collinear effective theory. I was talking about this yesterday with Christian and his student, and I'll point to the bit where I think that they definitely don't include a piece, right? So let me think about that. Let me not get held up.
Yeah.
We are going to find double logarithms, but they're not from two soft gluons becoming collinear to each other. It's going to come from a soft gluon being emitted collinear to one of the incoming guys, and that the observable is going to be sensitive to the fact that wide-angle emissions off that guy are not allowed. So we'll see. That's jumping way ahead. So this observable is interesting for lots of reasons, right? So here's a plot of the size of the gap against the emptiness of the gap, and as we go to very empty gaps, so the emptier the gap becomes, the larger this logarithm becomes, and we become sensitive to all this wide-angle soft gluon emission, the fact that it can't occur. Right, so we're squeezing the real emissions more and more in phase space, and consequently building up this logarithm. So that's as we increase the size of the gap, then there are also terms in the perturbative expansion which go like alpha s y. So I've been talking so far about resumming all the terms to order by order in perturbation theory to go like alpha s times that logarithm, but there's a whole tower of terms in the perturbative expansion which go like this. So large y, they're important. They're not. I'm not talking about them at all. That's BFKL physics. So if Y is large and the gap is not very empty, then the dominant contribution is actually multiple gluon emission in the final state. If the gap is empty, then it's color singlet exchange which dominates. And so a complete calculation really needs to match all of these, and then down in this region is where fixed order perturbation theory should be fine. So a complete calculation really ought to simultaneously include all of these logarithms. So it's an interesting thing for the experimenters to kind of map this, measure the cross section in this plane. So let me explain how we do the calculation first of all in the simplest case, and let me assume that the simplest case is two jets produced in equal C minus. So here it is. I've not even bothered drawing the initial particles because they're colourless. So this is the QQ bar. And naively, we're imagining that all emissions outside of the gap region, we're summing inclusively over that region, so everything cancels. All I need to do is consider preventing real emissions from taking place directly into the gap, which means, by the Bloch-Nozick theorem, that I can calculate that effect by just calculating the virtual correction. So this is how to calculate it at order alpha s. Calculate the virtual correction and integrate the virtual correction over the in-gap region, over the region in which the real emissions are forbidden. And that gives this factor here. And at order alpha s squared, of course, we've got lots of diagrams that we can include, but the leading logarithmic behaviour, the one that comes alpha s squared log squared, is a CF squared piece, which comes from including corrections where, from the point of view of the next emission, this guy's part of this point-like vertex, and then we can keep iterating that process. That, in the calculation, is made manifest by strongly ordering the transverse momenta, or virtuality, it doesn't matter, of these gluons. So they're ordered in transverse momenta. So we end up with a set of nested integrals over transverse momentum. And that leads to this exponentiation. So that's very simple. And it doesn't get much more difficult in the hadron-hadron case. So now I'm drawing, just for the sake of being definite, and the results I'll show will be for quark-quark goes to quark-quark. Now I've got to calculate again the order alpha s virtual corrections. This is four of the six. The other ones are these diagrams. And I've got to integrate this soft gluon over the in-gap region again, over this region. In this case, the colour structure is more interesting. So the soft gluons can change. There can be colour mixing, because this four quark matrix element doesn't just live in a single representation of the gauge group. So I mentioned this. Although I said I just want to define the language. So the cancellation that we talked about when I talked about this, I did say that actually the imaginary parts don't cancel for the same reason that the real parts cancel. That in this case it's because so the real parts of the virtual corrections cancel against the real emissions point by point in phase space. So it means I can map this loop integral. I can rewrite it as an integral which looks like the integral over the phase space of a real gluon. For example, I can write it dkt over kt times integral over rapidity. Right. So the phase space integral for the real part of the virtual correction I can write like that. For the imaginary part of the virtual correction, I don't have a rapidity integral to do. So I can write that guy like this. Actually, the imaginary part. So combining these two, actually, then we can see that the imaginary part is actually coming from some kind of log s over mu squared. Right? Very often, the calculation of these two guys are blocked. Are always kept together, but I actually want to separate them because the physics, I think it becomes more transparent if we separate out. So the imaginary part, so So the imaginary part of these virtual corrections is generated in the case that the gluon here is a global gluon, which in my language means that it puts on shell these guys. Right? That's why I call it a Coulomb gluon. It's just Coulomb scattering. Right? So these two guys are on shell, and this gluon is a global gluon. And I'll call it an iconal gluon, the case where the leading contribution to the virtual correction comes from the case where the gluon itself has gone on shell. Right. So in particular, when I do the loop integral and integrate over the energy of the of this gluon.
So a Coulomb gluon is zero energy.
So yeah, it's pure transverse. Yeah. So we have to be a little bit careful about these IPi terms, because clearly it relied on the argument that this guy cancelled this one because the one's on either side of the cut. But you might worry about subsequent virtual corrections, whether that still works, that cancellation, right? And it does still work. It works because the soft evolution is essentially determined by a symmetric imaginary matrix, so it effectively produces something like a phase in the matrix element, which cancels. So let's see how that works actually. So by doing the EPC minus calculation again, so here I have to integrate over this guy over the in-gap region. That's what I get. So here's the imaginary part making its appearance in the calculation, and then I trivially. This really is trivial. It's a phase, and it's a phase that cancels in the final answer, right? So this is all orders, but in the abelian case, right? So in the non-abelian case, what happens? Right? How does this all work out? So in actual fact, in the abelian case, this phase always cancels. The colour structure is too simple for it to never go away, for it ever to survive, and so we never have any sensitivity to these global gluons. In this simple observable, either above or below Q0. So the region below Q0, these IPIs are always going to cancel. That's the inclusive region. Above Q0, they appear in the matrix element for N E plus E minus, but then they disappear when I compute the cross section. They're not going to disappear in Hadron. They're going to survive. So here is the calculation of the matrix element. Let's draw a picture of it. For this, right? So it's the matrix element for quark-quark goes to quark-quark with the gap restriction between the final state jets. And if it's quark-quark scattering, then I just need two colour basis tensors in order to define the amplitude, the colour structure of the amplitude. So I can write the matrix element as these two scalar amplitudes. And the subsequent soft gluon evolution is exactly the same as in broad terms as we just computed for E plus E minus. In other words, it exponentiates. So every virtual correction sees essentially a point-like interaction. And the only subtlety now is that these guys are not just they're living in non-trivial representation of the group. So in quark-quark scattering, we've got these two components to consider. And you can see the IPi terms, the Coulomb-Gluon terms, they exist. These contributions correspond to colour mixing. So if we've got a matrix element that's initially in an octet, which it would be in the lowest order diagram is octet, then this says that I can add a soft gluon to this guy, which makes it singlet, right? These things are not in the Monte Carlos at all, right? There is no colour mixing in the Monte Carlo, so which might make you nervous when it comes to the simulations. No Monte Carlo includes the possibility that something that's an octet can mix into a singlet.
Is it possible to choose a basis that diagonalizes gamma?
Yes, it is. No, it's not possible to choose one, but not for general. It must be in that case because they're constant. It's the apparent antisymmetry is just because we've picked we've not normalized the basis tensors. So generally, gamma is a symmetric matrix, right? Generally, right? But it can't. No, it can't. It can't be possible that it can be. The physics has to. Well, maybe that's. I mean, I can diagonalize that matrix. So. I'm just being really. I'm being really stupid. Yeah, you can always diagonalize it. I mean, that's actually the way in which we calculate the results I'm going to show you later.
Yeah.
We don't work with these guys. When you put them into Mathematica, we diagonalize them first. So, okay, so and what happens, so that this is an unfortunate choice of basis because it looks like it's it looks like it's not a symmetric matrix, but if I normalize these guys, it would be a symmetric matrix. The region below Q0 is the evolution in that region. The real parts cancel. The real parts of this guy just cancel directly against the real emissions, which are allowed in that region. So we drop all the real parts of this matrix and just leave the imaginary parts behind. But then we've got actually, in a normalized basis, an imaginary symmetric matrix. So the evolution is determined by an imaginary symmetric matrix in the region below Q0. Which is the generalization of a phase. So they're unimportant. But the message here is that these IPIs survive and contribute to the cross-section due to Coulomb gluons emitted in the region KT bigger than Q0. So that's everybody knew that already. So these guys are relevant in the calculation of the cross-section. They are relevant, but they're in no Monte Carlo. Okay, so they're never included in any simulation of the final state. So even the one that lies in the diagonal isn't included because it's a bleeding in N. So the bit that's included in the Monte Carlos is this piece, in fact. Even though this is subleading in N, it's not subleading in N, but they actually include the full CF here in the Monte Carlos. But they don't include this, and this. Okay. So I'm going to skip the discussion of Higgs plus two jets, just to move on, right? So the radiation in Higgs plus two jets is exactly the same as if the Higgs weren't there, except for a change due to the kinematics, because the jets can recoil against the Higgs. But the physics is exactly the same, and we can calculate the probability that the gaps get filled in. Now I'm going to skip this because I'm going to show more details later on the Higgsless case, where we actually do a hadron level cross section. These are just partonic cross sections. The message from this at the time was just that fixed order calculations will never be good enough at the LHC to represent the effect of a vector. So the fixed order calculations correspond to these lines here, which deviate from the recent results, even in weak boson fusion, which are these top highs. So resummation effects, but that's not a very profound statement. So okay. But the answer to this question is in some sense needs to be established. How much of the physics I've been talking about is present, and how important is it? Everything I've said to this point. It actually only resums a subset of these logarithms. It doesn't resum them all. We made a mistake, right? The mistake was recognized by these guys, Desgupta and Salam, in about 2000. And it's the physics is remarkably simple, right? So if I've got a jet, two jets, and a gap between them. So here's a region of the detector, and this is the region where I'm not allowed to radiate this third jet. Right? This observable is sensitive to emissions outside of the gap that subsequently are forbidden from radiating back in. Right? It clearly is. Right? And in fact, the dominant contribution to the missing logarithms comes actually from emissions, any number of emissions outside the gap, which lie close to the gap. These guys introduced the idea of a buffer zone around the gap region, And the observable is very sensitive to emissions at the edge of the gap that can radiate back in it, into the gap. So in the language of Bloch Nordsig, we can see exactly where we went wrong, right? So this is schematic for the Bloch Nordsig cancellation. Real and virtual corrections, same diagram, just cut into different ways, cancel. But in this case, if this guy, so we take a particular soft gluon emission, and this guy, the blue, means it's one of these crosses. It's an emission outside of the gap region, right? So this is a soft gluon emitted outside the gap, but with transverse momentum above Q0. This guy here is an emission in the gap region, also with transverse momentum above K0. So this diagram here doesn't contribute to the observable, because this guy is vetoed, it's not allowed. An emission in the gap above Q0 is not allowed. But this diagram is the same diagram cut differently. The virtual correction for this is allowed. Well, we never took that into account. To calculate this guy and resum to all orders requires that we understand the soft gluon evolution of a 5-particle matrix element, not the 4-particle matrix element that we were previously resumming. And it's clear that the argument generalizes to 2 emissions outside the gap, 3, 4, so on, any number of crosses, which means that to resum these logarithms, even the leading logarithms, to all orders in perturbation theory, requires that I have to be able to keep track of the colour structure for n soft gluon emissions off the primary hard scatter, which is impossible. And it's the reason that problem has been solved only in the leading NC approximation, and only in the case that the colour structure is trivial, so only in the case of E plus E minus that we were talking about. Where, by the way, the equation that does the resummation is exactly the same as something called the Belitsky-Kovchikov equation in high energy physics, which has got nothing to do with this. There's a complete mapping between the two problems. They're the same, exactly the same equation. It's a non-linear evolution equation. But I'm not going to talk about that. But it's remarkably interesting. Looks like a complete coincidence. Okay, so I've said all that, and I've said all this too. So it's impossible to calculate with the current technology what the physics of it actually is. Right. At this point in the talk, or at this point in the logical development, I could put all my attention on trying to understand how to calculate these to all orders, to any number of crosses outside the gap in the leading NC approximation, but I'm not going to do that. What I'm going to do is I'm going to calculate the one emission outside the gap cross-section, but without making any approximation on the colour structure. So, and this is where the interesting... So I'm going to talk about the one hard emission outside the gap. So one of these, one little cross. In order to do that, I'm going to need 2 new ingredients. Here they are. So here's the original 4-particle matrix element. I need to know how to add a soft gluon to it. Okay, that's very trivial. And I need to know how to then evolve that 5-particle system through virtual corrections. And then, so in other words, here it is. Here's the matrix which is going to evolve this 5-particle matrix element. This is the transverse momentum of the virtual gluon that's dressing the 5-particle matrix element. Okay, so it was Mike Seymour and Albrecht Kirielis who explicitly calculated this for just this process. Nobody had all the attention previously focused on the 4-particle matrix elements. So that they calculated these guys in a particular basis. Subsequently, they've been calculated for all partonic matrix elements for 5-particle processes. So the complete evolution of 5-particle matrix elements has been explicitly written down, right? And that's the most complicated of them. And the point of showing that is to is you can't, if you're going to calculate a cross section, you have to pick a basis, and the matrices, so this the problem becomes intractable very quickly. Now, the result for this guy here, this is the soft gluon. This is the evolution matrix, completely generally, for an n-parton matrix element. It's actually a lot simpler than right? So this guy, this is this famous factor that we were talking about, right? The soft gluon factor. And then here's the colour structure. So this is partons I and J. So imagine an N parton matrix element, and so we've got N particles, and the partons I and J, and then this guy here. Right. What this is doing, it says the soft gluon evolution of that guy at one loop is gotten by summing over all pairwise ways of attaching soft gluons across the external legs. So actually, that's the all orders answer. We have it. We didn't. And so what I'm going to do now, instead of sitting in the basis and talking about the superleading logarithms in that basis, I'm going to stick into the in this language as long as possible, and so we can see where the physics goes from here. Right. So that's true for any observable, right? That's the generic soft evolution matrix for an N parton matrix element. There are some theta functions in here that define the observable, right? So once we pick gaps between jets as the observable, this is what we get, and we can ignore all this. So just focus on this bit here, right? For large gaps, all of these. These are just sensitive. They're jet functions essentially. These guys, this guy's even colour diagonal. And so these are Coulomb gluons, and you can see now that the effect of Coulomb gluons in gaps between jets is only present if both of the if there are two incoming coloured particles. If there are fewer than two incoming coloured particles, this term is zero, and they're unimportant. So they're never important in, for example, in DIS, where we've got a virtual photon scattering off an incoming coloured particle. And this thing here, TT squared, is... I've got... So generally, this N particle matrix element, this guy here, enters into my calculation now. I've got a left-moving cluster and a right-moving cluster, right, because the gap separates the event into two halves. And this is colour charge T1, this is colour charge T2. And T1 plus T left is what I call TT, which is the same as T2 plus T right. Right. Okay, so this guy here tells me that the soft gluon emission for large gaps is dominated, right, by the colour charge that's exchanged in the T-channel. So it means that the radiation at wide angles for glue-glue goes to glue-glue scattering is exactly the same as for quark-quark scattering. That the colour charge of the external particles only affects low-angle radiation. It does not affect wide-angle radiation. Okay, so separating out the IPIs and not leaving them in here, not keeping them with the wires, allows us to see that separate. There's quite different physics associated with these two. Okay, so and this object is my notation is not very good. This kind of gamma ij is so. Before I do the sum over ij, so the contribution to gamma from so the contribution to the soft gluon evolution. In the case that two particles become collinear to each other, right, gamma then becomes the soft evolution, gluon evolution off that structure is as if partons I and J were a single parton, right, with net colour charge, which is the sum of the colour charges of the two particles. So in other words, soft gluon emission off collinear particles in the final state, it's insensitive to them. So that's actually the origin of the factorization of wide-angle soft gluons from collinear partons in the final state. It's trivially obvious that if one of our particles has gone collinear to an incoming guy, that this doesn't hold anymore because of this guy. Gamma can no longer be written as T1 plus T whatever, right? Because it's not a function of the summed colour charges of the two collinear particles. And it's only the imaginary part of gamma that spoils that. So that this is the more mathematical statement, the coherent statement that I made earlier on. And it's precisely that which is going to generate all the interest in physics. Now, as an aside, understanding this result is something which there's quite an industry surrounds calculating this soft gluon evolution. And what's interesting is that, I mean, it's trivial that this guy that should have this colour structure at one loop, because it's just these diagrams, T1.T2. But it's true two-loop as well. And at least for a part of the three-loop calculation, it's true. So the no more complicated colour structures appear at higher loops. And there's an argument and various discussions now in the literature to suggest that it's true to all orders. So that's, but only in the massless case, only when all the partons here are massless. In the massive case, it fails immediately at two loop. Yeah. Okay, but that's so this physics is interesting for other reasons than the reasons I'm advocating. So the calculation now of this single cross section, so it's jet, gap, jet, plus one emission outside the gap, right, goes like this. Right? So here's the Born matrix element. Here is the soft gluon evolution, Born matrix element, soft gluon evolution of the Born matrix element, real emission, then subsequent evolution of the five particle state, right? And that's it. That's all there is to it. So that's how we calculate the. So this lambda is an instance of the general formula of gamma. Okay. So that's the real emission part. The virtual correction piece has got the same structure. So we know one of our virtual emissions can be in the out of gap region. Okay. So it's just the real parts. The imaginary parts have already been included in the soft gluon evolution. So this guy here is essentially taking into account just the real parts of virtual corrections that are in the out of gap region. All the other virtual corrections are integrated over the in gap region. So adding that to the result on the previous slide is the complete resummed cross section for one emission outside the gap. Now, when our out of gap gluon, when the cross becomes collinear to one of these final state jets, right, then the conventional wisdom has it that it should cancel, and we should find zero. But when it becomes collinear to one of the when our cross becomes collinear to one of the incoming legs, well, it should, until one would have thought that that too would have cancelled, and I'm going to explain why it really would have to cancel, but it doesn't. Entirely because of that I pi T1.T2 term. It does actually cancel for order alpha s relative to the Born approximation, alpha s squared and order alpha s cubed. So it's only at order alpha s the fourth relative to the Born term that this miscancellation occurs. These are the actual, in Feynman gauge, the Feynman diagrams that correspond to, for what it's worth, I'm not going to describe them, but there's a minimal subset, essentially. We've eliminated the dependence on the triple gluon vertex by using colour conservation, and just settled on this particular set of diagrams. Interestingly, actually, the colour structure of these diagrams is exactly the same as the colour structure of these diagrams. These diagrams are exactly the diagrams that are computed in small x physics to pairwise interactions of T-channel gluons. So, that it's probably further grist to the mill that this stuff is really related to high energy scattering. So what are we to make now? So what we've got is when our out of gap gluon becomes collinear to one of the incoming guys, I have a collinear divergence. The real and the virtual corrections don't cancel. I end up with this is the answer to the calculation, right? I've got alpha s to the fourth, the Born cross section, alpha s to the fourth, log to the fourth, pi squared, because there are two Coulomb gluons, one non-Coulomb gluon, which gives me the factor of y, and then I'm integrating over the rapidity of the out-of-gap gluon. Well, it's got an infinite volume, that out-of-gap gluon, right, in the massless case. I'm integrated, right, in the soft gluon approximation. We've got a soft gluon emitted out the gap. The upper limit on the rapidity integral is infinity. So we have that's a collinear divergence. But, and this is the key point, we can't have infinite rapidity with transverse momentum above Q0. So this out-of-gap gluon is an out-of-gap gluon with transverse momentum above Q0. We can't have an infinite rapidity, right? But in the soft approximation, we would be integrating that up to infinity. This is signalling to us that we should go beyond the soft gluon approximation when we calculate this. So we're going to recompute it. We're going to calculate exactly the same thing, but in the limit of large y, I'm going to calculate it in the collinear approximation, not the soft approximation. And doing that, so I'm going to calculate this is the thing that we're trying to calculate. Instead of calculating in the soft approximation, I'm going to calculate the lower part of the rapidity integral in the soft approximation, but the upper part in the collinear approximation. And of course, the dependence on y max will cancel in the end. And then this piece, the large rapidity region of the integral, which I'm treating in the collinear approximation, I'm going to calculate the real and virtual corrections to it. Right. So we go away now, forget about what we've just been calculating, right? And don't forget about it completely, because what we've just been calculating very much is this guy here, is all of this old tower of resummed soft gluon emissions which appeared on the slide a few slides back. But what's happened now is that where previously I had an integral over rapidity, it's now become the quark-quark scattering, the quark-quark splitting function integrated over the momentum fraction. So I've gone from here to here, right? This is what you can see here. This factor, because I'm not working in the soft approximation now, I really should be taking into account the fact that we need here, for the real emissions, the ratio of the quark distribution functions. And what I can do is add and subtract 1, which is what this is. Doing that, this is then the plus prescription. So this becomes plus, right, with just the quark distribution function. Right? And I can safely take delta to 0 in that case. So this is all nice and finite. And then I've got this piece that's left over, which is the divergent piece. But it's not divergent anymore, because it's cut off. The would-be divergence is cut off by the fact that I'm integrating y greater than y max. The virtual emission piece is just this piece, right? Except now that we've just shown that in this collinear limit, that the virtual contribution does not cancel the real contribution. So these aren't equal and opposite, these guys. They, right? That's the Coulomb gluon pieces. I've told me that AI doesn't equal AV, which everybody would previously have assumed, because if AR is equal to AV or minus AV, right, that this plus this gives these cancel, and I'm just left with the plus prescription. So that would be this collinear region would just be triggering the plus prescription in the Dirac evolution of the initial state particles. But there's a bit left over which. So this is a breakdown of collinear factorization in this observable. And so if that and that would be equal and opposite, we would get just the plus prescription. And doing so taking into account the bit that's left, so actually working this out, we end up with getting. So this, what would have been this integral before, the integral over the phase space of the out-of-gap gluon, becomes now a half log squared instead of a log. And that means that we end up with an alpha s to the 4 log to the 5th contribution appearing at fourth order, and correspondingly an alpha s to the 5th log to the 7, and so on. Right. And it's subleading in NC, the whole thing. So let me shift gear a bit now. So that's quite the origin of the superleading logarithms is let me turn to just talking about the impact of the various things that we've been talking about. So just completely how much of impact this all this has on the LHC. So the first thing, which is the less interesting maybe theoretically, but probably more important, is how important are these terms that we've been including, these Coulomb-Gluon terms in the soft evolution, that are not in the Monte Carlo, right? The dotted line is the result of cut. So this is essentially the gap cross section normalized, the Born cross section, so that it's not varying too much. It's a function of rapidity. This is the gap cross section as a function of the transverse momentum of the jets. And the solid line is the full resummed result, and the dotted one is the result of dropping the IPI terms, the Coulomb-Gluon terms. So the Monte Carlo should be compared to the dotted one, and it's wrong this is on a log scale, so it's very wrong for widely separated jets, even, you know, at 100 GeV, the effect is which is, the, so for Higgs jet at the LHC with a veto, typically the veto is this is all for a veto of 20 GeV. The jets are typically around 100 GeV, and the rapidity separation is 5 or more. So the effect's very significant even here, right? So what's that? That's a factor of what? 30%, something like that. Isn't that?
Is that right?
Maybe a bit less, 20%. So it's and out here, it's huge, right? It's a factor of 2 or so. So this plot is actually the comparison of the solid and the dotted curve. So the solid and dotted curves are on this curve, right? You can see them, actually. So the big deviation, so this plot is y equals 3. It's like this one, but at y equals 3. So the effects out here are similar to the effects out here, and you just can't see them because the cross-sections are varying over so many orders of magnitude. So this is the big effect, the difference between the dotted line and the solid line. And also on there is Herwig, the Herwig plus, in fact, Monte Carlo. And it actually lies pretty much on top of the solid curve, which means that it's really wrong, because it should lie on top of the dotted curve. So Herwig includes, well, it's not so much that Herwig's wrong, but it includes physics, which is not in the recent calculation. It includes energy conservation effects and so on. So really, if we added the Coulomb-Gluon terms into Herwig, it should jump up by about the difference between the dotted line and the solid line. So Herwig's off by about this much, right? And it seems that there's another effect of about the same size, which is not in the resummed calculations, which would presumably go away to a certain extent if the resummed calculations were matched to next leading order, their fixed order calculations as they stand. But actually, when I first saw this plot, I was really impressed that to completely this analytic calculation that I've just described is in really beautiful agreement with the full pattern show at Monte Carlo, which has got things like energy conservation included in it and so on. I mean, they should be the same up to these Coulomb-Gluon effects, and it looks like they are, right? And this is the slide which illustrates the impact of these superleading logarithms. So they're appearing quite a high order in perturbation theory for the first time. So although they're formally the most important terms in the perturbative expansion, right, alpha rest to the 4, log to the 5th, etc., the fact that they appear at quite high orders means that their impact is relatively small. So this is for jet gap jet. So if we look, so this is the contribution alpha rest to the 4, log to the 5th. So this is the lowest order superleading log contribution. This dashed line is the order alpha rest to the 5th log to the 7 contribution added in. So you can see that it's unstable, which is typical of doing a fixed order expansion of a series that you should be resumming. And we can resum. So we can actually, for one gluon outside the gap, one cross, we can resum to all orders the superleading logs in that case. And that's what this solid line is. So if you like, it goes all orders, okay. And that's what? That's a 20% effect at rapidities of 5 for jets of 500 GeV. So it's a modest effect, but not negligible. So one could hope to see that kind of a deviation by measuring this cross section at in this region. And what's also shown on here is we can actually do a little bit more than calculate one gluon outside the gap. I didn't talk about it. We can do two crosses, but only at order alpha s to the fifth. So it's we can calculate the contribution from the superleading log from two emissions outside the gap. And that's, so this is one emission outside the gap, and then this is what happens when you add in the second emission outside the gap. So the fact that this is a relatively small correction to this curve gives you some hope that actually the expansion in the number of crosses, if you like, the number of out-of-gap gluons, is not a bad thing phenomenologically. If that were the case, would save a lot of trouble on the, because then it means you could, all of these issues associated with the colour structure becoming arbitrarily more complicated, well, they would disappear, because it only becomes more difficult because of the number of out-of-gap gluons. So if the contribution is dominated by one emission outside the gap, that is phenomenologically very important to know. And it looks like, and this is the only calculation of two gluons outside the gap, but it's a small correction on one emission outside the gap at the same order. And the bottom line is that the superleading logarithms are not important for Higgs plus 2 jet production, not unless you take the Vitor scale down at something like 5 GeV. So if you can find a way of making the gaps really quite empty, then this kind of stuff could come and bite you. But typically the Vitor scale is picked to be around 20 GeV to avoid sensitivity to the underlying event. So that's pretty much it. This is a list of things that pertaining to just the superleading logarithms. Clearly, well, we've done that part of that now. We've done a part of the n equals 2 contribution. It's impossible to cancel out the n equals 1 guy from the n equals 2 guy. It doesn't work like that. I mean, the whole formalism falls to pieces for these observables, in that what would be the... So previously, the two-loop evolution matrices now become relevant for the lead-in, what would be the single logarithms. If this is right, then formally it you pretend that they're not there and pretend that the leading logs are all that we need. But more than anything, I think that this is interesting because of the fact it's the first case that I'm aware of a direct breakdown of collinear factorization. I mean, it's not an inclusive observable, and collinear factorization is not supposed to hold for non-inclusive observables. And we've looked very specifically at one observable, because we kind of came from that angle, jet gap jet. But the question of where this might have an impact otherwise is I think needs to be looked at. And the question mark at the end of the whole business, that you know, we're not 100% certain that they necessarily exist, and is that we've considered, although I think these are fading away as we understand better what's going on, the failure of transverse momentum ordering would be a real surprise, right? It would just be some weird feature of the multi-loop integrals, which means that ordering in transverse momentum doesn't get the leading logarithms. But we've not proven that KT ordering is okay. And then the other thing that one might worry about is that so we've been calculating with coloured external particles. You might worry that let's pick an example of photon-photon scattering. So again, two jets in the final state with a gap between them, so maybe generated by, so these are our two final state jets. I might worry about soft gluons connecting across these ways, right? That they might have something to say. They've never such diagrams are important in the proofs of factorization in QCD, but only in the infrared, only at low KT. And our, in our case, all these guys have got KT, which is perturbatively large. But again, that probably needs check-in to see that there are some unexpected cancellations from that source. And the conclusions on the whole thing. So on the one hand, we've been talking about these super leading lines, and on the other hand, we've been talking about the reliability of existing patterns, Shell and Monte Carlos. And from a phenomenological point of view, the impact of global gluons on soft gluon evolution in these types of observables is significant at the LHC, and the Monte Carlos aren't reliable at sometimes even up to factors of 2, depending on how empty the gap is. Could have an effect, for example, on the backgrounds in Higgs plus 2 jet with a VTOR, because the backgrounds can be, which typically have got colour exchange, radiate into the gap, but the backgrounds are subject to soft gluon evolution too, and they could colour mix into singlets and not radiate into the gap so much. If you've got a 20% uncertainty on the background in Higgs plus 2 jet production, that's huge. So that's not been studied particularly. I've at various points mentioned the link to small X physics or high energy scattering, which has been recognised by these various people, but that's still in its infancy really. And I also mentioned the interest in this soft evolution matrix to successively higher loops, which is also really interesting. So I think that's certainly a true statement at the end there. Thank you very much for sitting through.
I'm not so sure about the. It's not so much process dependent as
non-classical.
As non-classical, yeah. But it is, yeah. So, yeah, I think that without some breakthrough on the colour algebra side, that it would always be impossible. So in Herwig, the leading NC approximation is involved, right? And that allows them to kind of include an approximation to these guys. But even in Herwig, they don't include the leading NC information completely correctly. So for glue scattering, right? They look at the radiation of this color structures like this for glue scattering. But Herwig has to identify a unique color pattern to any given parton to define the parton, to define the angular ordered cascade. So for this outgoing gluon, it's either color partnered to this guy or to this guy in Herwig, and it picks them 50-50 on an event by event. So some of the time, this guy is color connected to this guy, and that will correspond to low angle radiation. So Herwig produces gap events due to that effect, right? Which may explain actually why Herwig's curve is a bump dotted curve there. It's either due to energy conservation or something like this. What it should be doing is including both in the same event. It should be recognising that this guy can be colour connected to this and to this. So it's like two pattern shows at the same time it should be doing. So the authors of Herwig, well, one of them is Mike Seymour. That probably needs fixing in order to properly simulate this radiation. Okay, thanks.